Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In episode 36, our visionary is Radharani Mitra. She's the Global Creative Advisor at BBC Media Action with more than 20 years of experience across new and legacy media. Radharani has spearheaded many national and international public service campaigns such as the Condom Ringtone, M-Health innovations like Mobile Kunji, Mobile Academy and Kilkari, a TV drama on gender called Aadha Full and many others. Tune in as Radharani talks about her love for storytelling and her experience working on these impactful campaigns at BBC Media Action.
Okay, so I grew up in Calcutta, which we now know as Kolkata, but it's still Calcutta for me. I grew up in a nuclear family, but it was in effect not a nuclear family because we had a very, very close-knit extended family. I grew up with a host of very, very powerful women, my aunts, my grandmother. We had quite a fascinating family history. So, you know, we grew up with a sense of where we were coming from because the family stories were intertwined with history, politics, the freedom struggle, the world of arts. It was a very, very non-materialistic upbringing. My father was a very impractical man, but he was also a charmer. He was, I think, a great intellect and essentially grew up with a lot of really fabulous storytellers. I think my worldview was very much shaped by my growing up years in Calcutta and also, you know, not just school, but university as well. As I said, there was a lot of family history, but we grew up in a house with people, not only inside the house, but with aunts and uncles who were all, you know, lovers of books. So we developed a deep love for books, the arts. I went to a school that gave us a very, very balanced education. And when I say that, I don't mean science and arts, but I mean it made me very ambidextrous. I'm mixing metaphors here because I grew up with an equal facility in both languages, English and Bengali. And a lot of my contemporaries in my social class, I now think, did not grow up knowing their own language very well. And I'm making a special point of it now because I think that facility with both Bangla and English has given me a very, very deep understanding of languages. And I find it so easy now to create content in different Indian languages. So also, you know, just growing up, sort of reading books, watching films, having lots of conversations about politics, about history. I wasn't a very sciencey girl. And I think it was also kind of fashionable in my time when I was in my teens, not to sort of, you know, cock a snook at science. And I've taken a complete, made a complete U-turn. I have the greatest respect for women in STEM, or I find science, I don't understand a lot of it, but I find it very, very, I just, I'm fascinated by the world of science and scientists now. But like I said, you know, we grew up reading Peluda and Womkesh along with Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot, Miss Marple, P.G. Woodhouse on the one hand, Ghanada, Tenida on the other, Ashapurna Devi and Dickens. So it wasn't atheil or intellectual the way Calcutta is often caricatured, but it was a genuinely kind of culturally rich, intellectually rich life, where I think those things were more important than a lot of the trappings that we now see around life, you know. We were not, my father wasn't a rich man, but our social set was very affluent. And after my father retired, which we were still quite young then because my parents married late, which was also quite unusual, but we had to be careful. I also grew up with two sets of parents because my mother's siblings, my mama and my Marcy, were single, and therefore, you know, we were the center of their universe. Mm. And I also want to just mention my three buas, my father's three sisters, who were extraordinary women.
Yeah.
You know, this is how we grew up in, you know, childhood, early adolescence. And then I went to Jadavpur University to major in English. So I did both my graduation and post-graduation from JU. And JU was a total disruption because, you know, although we had a very conventional upbringing, although it was very, very liberal at its essence, at its heart. But my horizon just opened up at Jadavpur University. We had a fabulous, fabulous set of teachers at JU, yeah. And acquired just lifelong friends and, you know, I mean, saw aspects of life that I had not hitherto been exposed to. So it was like everything was popping, you know, in front of my eyes. So, yeah, I'm really glad I grew up in Cal because it made me intellectually and in terms of sensitivities, it gave me a lot for the rest of my life. And then, you see, I was a good student. I did very well in both my, I got firsts, both, you know, for my honors graduation and in MA. And so the natural expectation from the whole bunch of profs at JU was that I would be going abroad and I would pursue PhD. But I was always sort of quite contrarian, quietly so. I wasn't a rebel ever. I wasn't an openly flamboyant kind of rebel, but I think I've been a rebel very quietly in my life. Mm. And I didn't want to do what everybody else wanted me to do. So I just quietly slunk off and got myself a job at Lintas, and my advertising career began there. Mm. And Lintas was another complete eye-opener. It was just a fantastic agency in those days. The Calcutta Lintas office was very, very cosmopolitan,
yeah.
Which I think really grounded me I didn't quite become Kolkata after that and everything negative that people associate with Calcutta or West Bengal. Mm. And I got my first breaks very quickly, like in my first month in advertising when I was a trainee copywriter. I didn't even have an appointment letter. In those days, Lintas never gave appointment letters to creative trainees.
Okay.
But I got to do my first film, which was the Cherry Blossom Mime film. So, you know, I was given a long rope and I was told that go either you sink or you swim. Mm. And in those days, I think, you know, we wanted to prove that we could do it and, you know, we could take a lot of hardships. We didn't have a lot of cushion, you know, around us.
Yeah.
It was either we made it or we didn't. So we were men, most of us were very ambitious, but it was all, it was tempered. It was not like the ambition was not to possess this and possess that truly, but it was to develop the fantastic portfolio, you know, that you could have in 6 months' time. What's in your book?
Yeah.
That was the ambition. So, yeah, I mean, and of course, then, you know, that was that, you know, I entered advertising and I carried on.
And Radharani, how long did you spend in the advertising industry?
I spent nearly 2 decades in advertising. I started in Cal, like I told you, and I spent many years in Calcutta, but because I was in Lintas and because I got those very early breaks, I spent most of my time working out of Bombay because, you know, we had to go to Bombay for all the shoots and production. So I also did a short stint in Bombay. So I spent a disproportionate amount of my time in Bombay from very early on, which also I think shaped my professional outlook a lot, because I always thought Bombay was an extremely modern, contemporary and professional city.
Yeah.
Everybody was interested in work and you were known by what you did, not by who you know or where you came from. It was your work that spoke for you. So all those things, I mean, I'm very lucky that I got those breaks and I got to know Bombay and stepped out of Calcutta, you know, when I was still very, very young.
Yeah. And that this is around what time? What, which year?
This is in the late 80s and 90s. And then in 2000, in 2000 February, I moved to Delhi.
Okay. So Radharani, let's talk about the present. Let's talk about what you're doing now with BBC Media Action. So can you tell me exactly what this organization is, what it does, and what are the core areas that you focus on?
Right. So it was in 2007 that I joined BBC Media Action on a two-year contract. BBC Media Action is the BBC's international independent charity, and our mandate is to use all forms of media and communications to achieve social impact. So the work we do is essentially of two types. The first type is that we create social and behavior change communication. So using any and every form of media, it could be, a television and radio campaign. So mass media, it could be television drama, it could be radio drama, programs, factual programs on television, radio, outdoor. So from mass media to digital media, social media, mobile phones, apps, and any form of outreach or activation. So our aim is to actually, you know, bring about change using communication, changing people's knowledge, changing people's attitude, changing norms, and finally to affect change in behavior. And essentially we work in three areas, three thematic focus areas. We work on health, we work on governance and human rights, and we work on resilience, which is, looking at conflict, issues that originate from conflict or climate change, and gender and livelihood education. These are cross-cutting issues. One thing I do want to make very clear over here is that BBC Media Action is independent because it's not funded by the BBC. We are a project-funded organization. We either develop projects and pitch for funding, or we respond to, projects. We create or we develop new projects, and we are entirely funded. So, for example, when I joined BBC Media Action, I joined to work on a two-year project, which was our first project globally, funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And it was to do a mass media campaign on condom normalization. And I just wanted to tell you one more thing. I was in advertising at the time. I was the executive creative director at Bates Delhi. It was Bates Enterprise Delhi. And, you know, my life was going very well. I was on a high. I had a big team. Everything was going well. But I think that I kind of joined, took this offer up on a sort of a, I wouldn't call it an impulse, but I just wanted to break loose and do something different, you know. I felt very weighed down at the time. I had been doing the same thing for many number of years, and I just wanted to do an experiment. So there was this need in me to test my own appetite for change, for risk, because it would be a risk, you know, to walk away from something that was going so well for 2 years. And I think I was tickled by the fact that I would be working on a very, very difficult subject like normalizing condoms, you know. I had no familiarity with the sector. I hadn't ever worked in the development sector. I didn't know too many people. But it was just something I just wanted to, like I said, you know, I'm not a flamboyantly rebellious, or I don't come across as a disruptive person at all. But I just wanted to test my own capacity for changing gears. I said, okay, fine. Let me just turn my face away and go, you know, take a turn, go down another road and check it out for 2 years, and then I can always come back to advertising. But of course, I never did.
So Radharani, I want to understand the sort of work that BBC Media Action does. And let's take the example and let's talk about the condom normalization campaign, which you did, right? So when you have something like that, I want to understand, like, how does something which is a medium, something like that may have a social impact or may have a measurable impact on any given topic or a society or a culture. So even with condom normalization campaign, what was the brief behind this project and what were some of its measurable impact?
Okay, so I don't know whether you know, but this was in 2007 and 2007, 8 and 9.
Actually, and I remember the campaign because I remember being a kid and watching this on the TV.
Yes.
Yeah.
For a campaign that's 13 and a half years old, people haven't forgotten it. So that's a measure of success, if you like. Yeah. No, so you see, I'll just illustrate what BBC Media Action does, as you said, taking the example of the condom normalization campaign. So when a donor gives us a project, for example, BMGF or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, giving us a grant to work for 2 years on a mass media campaign to normalize condoms. Now, at that time, Gates Foundation was engaged in possibly one of the largest HIV programs in the world. It was called Avahan. These were the days when, you know, controlling HIV and AIDS was a real global and as well as national priority, because it was a huge sort of, you know, health. It was a silent kind of pandemic. It wasn't so silent. Yeah. It was very salient in those days. So I think there was a lot of stigma around HIV. There was a lot of stigma around, there is a lot of stigma around the word sex or anything to do with sex. You know, sex does not have India, which is why we have 1.3 billion people, of course. So it was very important to get out of, highly vulnerable groups and take this message to general population. And we targeted the campaign at primarily men and to kind of, you know, associate positive, smart values with the word condom or with condom use, actually. So when you say normalizing something, you want to bring it out of the black box that, say, condoms had gotten into, because obviously condoms are associated with sex, but also because of the growing association with HIV itself, which meant mortality, which meant promiscuity, all of that, right? Mm-hmm. So the job of the campaign was to actually associate condom with positive values like smartness. In India, people believe in destiny, but in a changing India, and I'm talking about, you know, 13, 14 years back, I think Indians wanted also to take back control of their lives. So control was becoming more of a positive desired value. And we said that we need to sort of associate condom with smartness, smart men, and we wanted people to talk about condoms and appreciate the smartness of men who used condoms. Okay. So we came up with this campaign which had a parrot as its mascot, because a parrot talks. Campaign was Jo Bola Wohi Sikandar, the one who talks is a winner, and Jo Samjha Wohi Sikandar. It was a campaign planned in four phases, four media bursts. Initially, the campaign was meant to be for four states, Maharashtra, Karnataka, Andhra Pradesh, and Tamil Nadu, which were four of the six high prevalent HIV states in India. But the first phase of the campaign, which was launched as a contest, and mind you, this was the first ever contest campaign done for any social impact issues in India. It did so well that NACO sat up and said that this is a great campaign and we want to scale it up nationally. And, you know, it meant that the campaign went national. It went all India. The government actually ended up spending 27 times the amount of money that the donor did in order to buy media.
Wow.
And the campaign back. So the way we measure communication is actually tricky. It's complex. And, you know, one could talk for 7 days on the science of it.
Yeah.
But the thing is that when you set out to you know, look at what indicators would determine the success or failure of any communication intervention. It's not just to say that, oh, people will use condoms. That wasn't the indicator. What we wanted to check was, did people engage with the campaign? Were people talking about campaigns? Did people after watching, condoms, did people after watching the campaign feel that using condoms was a smart thing and all of that? So what happened was that in the, so the campaign was actually evaluated at BBC Media Action. We never launch anything without pre-testing it. So we pre-tested each phase and we did the contest. Then we did the Kabaddi phase where there's a Kabaddi match and people are chanting condom, condom, condom instead of Kabaddi, Kabaddi, Kabaddi. And then there was the famous condom ringtone, the first one of its kind globally. The condom ringtone campaign, of course, took the world by, literally the world by storm. Gong, 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 gong. Condom. Condom, 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 condom. Just to give you a sense of numbers, the ringtone was, there were almost 800,000 requests for download for the ringtone because it was an actual ringtone. It was, you know, something that you could download. The ringtone made it to the newspapers and publications all over the world, you know, from Times of India here to you name it. The ringtone was picked up and played on radio stations. It was played by the NPR in America, in countries like Italy, Indonesia, Malaysia, Iran, Canada. I mean, the list is endless. I'm just giving you four or five names. So it was a huge, huge success. The condom normalization campaign reached 150 million men. And I do want to acknowledge the Gates Foundation's vision and foresight in actually supporting us when we said that we need to buy media in a scientific manner. Because if you remember, Swati, even today, a lot of social impact media campaigns are, you know, give us some free airtime and we'll do it. And in those days, there was no social media really. But we said, no, you have to buy and plan and buy media like a brand does. And the Gates Foundation supported us. They were actually thrilled to bits that the government actually leveraged, that we were able to leverage government funds because that made the campaign go huge. You know, it became a very big campaign. It was evaluated and it did very well on the indicators that I have mentioned. The evaluation that was done on the condom normalization campaign has been actually peer reviewed and published in academic journals. So when something is peer reviewed, it's the gold standard, right? And I never cease to be amazed and thrilled, and I feel really excited every time I meet somebody from an international university to hear that they are teaching the condom normalization case study in their classes. You know, Columbia University, Emory University, University of Southern California, the Annenberg School, and many others. I think the condom normalization campaign was a landmark, and it actually did many things for us as an organization. Well, it got me to write the second lead article in India Today for their annual sex survey issue. Can you beat that?
Wow.
I also wanted to tell you a very funny story. Do you have time for it?
Yes, yes, I do.
Okay, so, you know, when I was joining BBC Media Action, an aunt of mine, one of my chachis, who was very, very fond of me, and I was like a daughter to her, and she was always very proud, and she'd tell all her friends all about everything I did, you know, much more than my own parents did. So she was thrilled to bits that I was joining the BBC, you know, for Anglophile Calcuttans and Bengalis joining the BBC. And my father had passed by then, and she said, oh, your father would have been so proud of you, and, you know, etc., etc. Then she said, so what are you going to do there? So I said that, well, I'm joining to do this campaign on condoms. Her face fell down to her knee. And she said, what? What am I going to tell my friends? So I said, well, I don't know. I said, this is exactly why I have to go and do this campaign, so that you can tell your friends very proudly that, you know, Radharani is going and working on a condom normalization campaign. So 3 or 4 years later, there was a very big retrospective at the Pompidou Center, which is, you know, the great museum after Louvre in Paris. Mm-hmm. It was called Delhi, Bombay, Paris. It was a comprehensive retrospective of contemporary Indian art with some French artists represented. And it was a global kind of event. And they wrote to us and they said that we want to feature your Kabaddi film because we think it's a work of art and it's a very telling symbol of modern India. So I told my aunt, that see, you told your aunt, and you looked so crestfallen and you were so disappointed. And now my campaign is going to be featured at the Pompidou Center. So then, of course, she said, yes. So, yeah, I grant you, and I think she felt a grudging sense of sort of pride.
Yeah. While you were telling me the story, Radharani, one thing that blew my mind was that this was before the social media burst.
Yes.
This campaign reached out to 150 million men across the world. That's huge.
No, in India.
In India alone. Oh, wow.
Yeah. But that's not a difficult thing.
Hmm.
You see, we forget the power of television.
Yeah. At least my generation do. I keep on I take it for granted, quite honestly, because I grew up in a world where digital was just, you know, popping up. And the first internship and the job that I had was around social media. So I keep on forgetting the power of digital. But even in that, I mean, the impact that this campaign had, considering that it was on a very taboo thing, because I remember when I used to watch this ad as a kid in my living room with my parents, you know, I used to just be a little shy and be like, oh, should I change the channel or whatever? But we used to watch the entire ad. But it was the first time I remember when I saw something like a condom or something like that being there or being advertised in such a creative, if I must say, a blatant way, where I felt that I was intrigued to know what was happening.
See, one of the things that you've actually hit something that I was going to talk on a little later, but it's very relevant now. I believe, as a communicator, as a person who's made communication her life's business, from when I was 22 years old, when I joined advertising. See, the thing is that if you want to really engage people, whether that person is watching something on television, whether that person is hearing something on radio, whether that person is clicking on their phone, and accessing any of the digital media, social media platforms, or even if you look at a woman who lives in a village, because remember that at BBC Media Action, a lot of our work is done for rural India.
Yeah.
It's work for lower socioeconomic strata, people from lower socioeconomic classes. I think that your work has to be insightful. You've really got to know your audiences. One of the core BBC values is that communities are at the heart of everything you do. If you don't know your target audience, then you can't do anything that is effective. The other thing is that when you think of your ideas, you have to be able to disrupt. You know, a lot of the communication still done in the world of development is very much around messaging. But you can't message people, right? When I'm talking to you, I'm communicating with you. So you have to disrupt. You have to engage people. And the best way to engage people is to intrigue and involve them. So when, say, if you had been watching the Condom Ringtone film or Kabaddi, Condom Kabaddi,
yeah,
you would get drawn into that film, and then you'd either be, you wouldn't be able to remain indifferent to the
yeah.
film.
Yeah.
That's the whole point, right? Sometimes your work can produce discomfort, but that's also good. And sometimes your work has to point you towards the right direction. And it's a very complex scientific process, which brings me to my other favorite thing, is that what we do at BBC Media Action is we do the science, art and craft of communication. And that is the way you can't just sit down and start thinking of ideas on, you know, and write them down on a white sheet of paper and bingo, you know, you have an effective program or an effective campaign or an effective mobile service. You really have to know your audiences. You know, you really need to be immersed, which is why Swati, every time we start a new project, we actually, the first phase of the project is called immersion, which is, you know, doing formative research, going out on immersion trips, getting to know the people you'd be working for, working with, looking at desk research, talking to experts. We just take that part of our work very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that makes me really happy that I work, you know, I do the work I do, is that actually for the past 14 years of my life, I've been doing really meaningful, but I do real work. I don't do work to just win awards. My work has won lots of awards in the last 14 years and a lot of global acclaim. But actually, I have to do work that will achieve real impact, because that's our accountability to our donors who support these projects. Mm-hmm. And if we cannot achieve impact, then our work is really meaningless. That is not to say that you can't make mistakes, because I think if you make mistakes, you learn. And mistakes are important to learn. Or, you know, you take two steps forward, you take a step backward, you learn, you go forward again. So, yeah, it's a complex business, but it's fascinating. And it's real work.
Yeah, yeah.
Not patli gali.
Radharani, I wanted to ask you, I mean, everything that you said was, though it was, it's all so intriguing and interesting, it also might be a little taxing, because when you're immersing yourself into, you know, so many issues, because you're creating a work that is going to have a huge social impact, how do you sort of balance between your personal and your professional life in that way? You know, then what I'm trying to understand is that throughout this time when you have been working with BBC Media Action, and even when you were working with Bates as a senior executive, how were you sort of balancing your personal and your professional life? Or were you someone who was always ambitious and, you know, were devoting more time to your professional, I don't know, goals and ambitions? Or were they the same for you?
I'm a workaholic. Anybody who knows me will tell you that. And I am completely dedicated, sometimes it's not very good for me, to my work. So yes, there have been a couple of casualties along the way. I mean, for example, you know, in interviews and things, when people are asked, do you have any regrets? And, you know, most people say, no, we don't have any regrets. But if you were to ask me, Radharani, do you have any regrets? I'd say, yes, I do. For example, you know, I was a very, very good singer. I had musical training for a number of years, and I had a gift. I mean, I know now that I really had a gift, and I kind of, you know, gave it up somewhere along the way. I got so consumed with advertising, with my work, with my travels, with, you know, friends, and I made those my excuses and gave up singing. And that's something I really regret, because, and I'm saying this to you, and I'm saying this for our listeners as well, that when you're given a talent or you're given a special skill, it needs to be nurtured. You can't ignore it. You can't not pay attention to it. If you do, then it gets angry and it goes away. It gets hurt. So I think it's really important to, you know, really nurture anything that's a gift. Of course, see, the thing is that creative work cannot be done by everybody, right?
Yeah.
So you do need creative talent. And I know I have that. And I'm not saying that in a pompous way at all. Obviously, I've come so far because I've had that talent. But I think it was important for me to continue to sing. And I regret that. In terms of work-life balance, no, I haven't really had an ideal work-life balance. And that it's not that I don't have personal responsibilities. And although I'm single, I've always had responsibilities. I've always been very family minded. And I'm very lucky. I have a very large, I have a very, very special set of friends. So, but yes, I mean, you know, I'm very hard on myself. It's not a virtue, I think. Now that I look back, so it's not always been a balanced kind of, and it continues to be unbalanced, actually. I mean, these last few months, this last year, although we have all sat at home and worked, I have just worked like a maniac, you know, and have,
I mean, I just caught a little glimpse of that because it was, considering your busy schedule, it was so difficult to, you know, schedule this recording. And I'm so grateful that we were able to do that today. But I just caught a little glimpse of exactly how busy your schedule is.
Oh, I'm really, really so glad we are chatting.
Yeah.
Thank you for asking.
No, it's absolutely my pleasure. So Radharani, moving on, can you tell me more about the initiatives like Mobile Kunji, Mobile Academy and Kilkari? Like, whom was it targeted towards? And what was the brief behind these campaigns as well?
Okay, so these mobile services using IVR, which is the Interactive Voice Response technology, these are three services that were designed for the people of Bihar initially, because we were once again supported by the Gates Foundation to work on maternal and child health.
Okay.
So basically, our mandate was to improve about 10 behaviors in a span of 1,000 days. So, you know, when a woman becomes pregnant up to up to the point when the child turns 2 years is a 1,000-day period. So there are a whole host of behaviors along that timeline. And we were working on that. We were supported by the foundation to do this work in Bihar. It was a grant called Shaping Demand and Practices. And that's when we started looking at how we could use mobile services to improve attitudes and change attitudes, improve knowledge and, you know, improve what is called efficacy, meaning the feeling of confidence in a person to say that, oh, I could do this. You know, it could be self-efficacy, it could be collective efficacy, and finally behavior and social norms. Now, when we started work, this was in 2011. Bihar, as you know, is one of India's poorest and most populous states. 104 million people at that time in Bihar. And this was to reach the poorest of the poor, women in villages. And we realized, to our utter horror, that it was very, very difficult to reach these people because, you know, they didn't have exposure to mass media. They did not have the right kind of, you know, the mostly men had mobile phones, but also brick phones. So we said that the only way we could actually reach these households was through the frontline health worker. So, you know, the Asha Didis who go into literally courtyards to counsel women.
Yeah.
And we could be using mobile phones, but the mobile phones were not smartphones at all. Okay, so remember one thing, that even today, 11 years down the line, the talk of digital India is also, it does not factor in that everybody doesn't have a smartphone. A, their smartphone penetration in India is still very, it's not that great at all. And I'm not going to give you facts and figures here because, you know, this is not a presentation I'm
sure.
making.
Yeah.
And B, there is a great gender divide. So it is mostly men who have the smartphones, and therefore women have very limited access to ownership to smartphones, right? Mm-hmm. So we said that we could be actually, so we were in search of appropriate technology. We were not going to design something, a solution that would reach only a few people in a little pilot that could not be scaled up. We wanted scalable solutions. Mm-hmm. So we said we will use appropriate technology, and therefore our killer app, and that's what Ann Nelson, who's a professor at Columbia University, said that BBC Media Action's killer app was the voice call. We designed two services for the frontline health workers. Okay, one was called Mobile Kunji, and this was an innovation because it was a job aid which the frontline health worker could carry with her at all times and walk into households and counsel the women, both the young women and their mothers-in-law. Basically, it was a deck of cards shaped like a smartphone on a ring. So 40 cards on a ring. On each card, there was a number, mobile number, and the frontline health worker, the Asha Didi, would pick up a card. So for example, if she walked into the house and thought that she would talk about, say, family planning or birth preparedness or whatever, she'd pick the relevant card, she would counsel the woman, and she would dial her phone and make the woman listen to the voice of Dr. Anita. Now, Dr. Anita is a doctor character we created, and Dr. Anita became the voice, counseling, giving knowledge to all these women, both the frontline health worker and the young pregnant woman or the new mother and her mother-in-law on all these services. So Mobile Kunji was a job aid for the frontline health worker to be used when she was counseling and doing her job. It was also to make her feel more confident. So it was to improve her own interpersonal communication skills, right?
Okay.
And Mobile Academy was a training course meant for the Asha Didis. Again, you know, in chapters and, you know, I mean, this to describe and to do justice to these services would take a whole session.
Yeah.
And, you know, we could. And then there was Kilkari, which was a direct to consumer service where basically a woman would get a call from Dr. Anita. And it would be a time-appropriate call. So, for example, if the woman is in her third trimester of pregnancy, each week she'll get a call which is with a message that is relevant for her for her stage of pregnancy.
Hello, bhaiya bhabhi. Kaise hain? Badhiya. Main hoon Dr. Anita. Aur main Bharat Sarkar ki किलकारी मोबाइल सेवा से बोल रही हूँ। किलकारी सेवा बिल्कुल मुफ्त है, इसके लिए आपके पैसे नहीं कटेंगे। भाभी ने अपनी गर्भावस्था का पंजीकरण आशा या ANM दीदी के पास करवाया था ना, इसलिए मैंने आपको फोन किया है। अब से मैं डॉक्टर अनीता हफ्ते में एक बार आपको फोन करूँगी और बताऊंगी वो जरूरी बातें जो आपके लिए करना बहुत ही आसान है। ये बातें होंगी हर माँ बच्चे की अच्छी सेहत के लिए अनमोल जानकारी। आप किलकारी सेवा हर हफ्ते याद से सुने ताकि मैं और आप मिलकर आपके बच्चे को दे सकें एक बेहतर भविष्य। हमने बढ़ाया है हाथ, पूरी है तैयारी, अब साथ देने की आपकी है बारी।
Now, out of these three services, and all of them had Dr. Anita as the voice piece, okay?
Yeah.
We worked together as a team. We produced the content. We had a fantastic sort of technical brief, a message grid. We developed the content. We did a lot of research. with the women, with the frontline health workers, to know where we would pitch it, what level of simplicity, what kind of language. We actually developed a whole kind of mishmash Bihari for Bihar. But you'd be happy to know, Swati, that the government of India actually took Mobile Academy and Kilkari and scaled these two services up nationally. And therefore, today, Mobile Academy and Kilkari are in 13 states in India. Kilkari was last heard. So we developed these services nationally in four languages. We handled it for the government for 3 years, and we have now exited. So government has scaled it up. We have handed, we have transitioned these services to the government, and that is a big feat. It makes me very proud. It is being run by the government of India now. And when we handed the services over, Kilkari was reaching 1.6 million households every week.
Wow.
And Mobile Academy had been already, the course had been completed by some 40,000 health workers. Mobile Kunji also has incredible sort of, you know, impact figures. What is important and what makes our hearts sing now is that Stanford University has done a thorough analysis of the impact of the work done in Bihar by several partners, and we are one of the partners. And they have actually analyzed all impact evaluation data collected by us and some other entry sort of evaluation exercises that were done. They have analyzed it. This is the Stanford School of Medicine. And they have published papers now that prove that Mobile Academy has had, caused significant improvements in knowledge and behaviors amongst Bihari women who were exposed to Mobile Kunji and Dr. Anita. And this was rigorously analyzed, also looking at rigorous evaluation, across multiple data sets. And it shows that Mobile Kunji was an mHealth intervention which was implemented at scale. And they feel, Stanford has said, that the results can actually help inform, global understanding of how best to use mHealth tools, for whom and in what kind of context. So I think as a team, we have been able to contribute to global expertise on how to use mHealth, right? Similarly, Johns Hopkins University has conducted an extensive impact evaluation on Kilkari and Mobile Academy. And they have shown that Dr. Anita, Kilkari has been able to actually move the needle on family planning and people's beliefs that modern contraceptive methods work. And family planning is an impenetrable behavior in India. You know, it's very, very difficult to move the needle on anything related to family planning. And the fact that Kilkari has been able to move the needle on a difficult subject such as family planning is a big feather in our collective caps, you know. Not just us, but the government, our donors, our other partners, all of us. And it has also shown that even with Mobile Academy, that frontline health workers, they really appreciate this kind of training. And what we have been able to do as an organization is taking our learnings from these mHealth services and taking our learnings from, say, something like a Mobile Academy, Kilkari and Mobile Kunji, of course, I mean, they are very big services. We have been able to do a similar service for sanitation workers. We call it SBM Academy for the Swachhagrahis, which has now gone to scale, again, adopted by the Jal Shakti Ministry, the Department of Drinking Water and Sanitation. And we are now conducting a smaller pilot in a couple of districts in Madhya Pradesh. Actually, we are doing it in Jharkhand and Bihar on farming, on agriculture. So we are kind of, you know, developing a whole portfolio of mobile services to train people in different areas. I'm I'm really, you know, two or three things really excite me and make me very happy and make me very thankful as well. A is that, you know, working on mobile services at scale is a fantastic opportunity. We created that opportunity for ourselves, and to be able to deliver at such large scale is indeed very gratifying.
Yeah.
Learned a lot, Swati, in the process. You know, writing for mobile services is a completely different ballgame. Yes, it is audio. The IVR services are audio, but you write very differently.
Yeah.
It has to be done with mathematical precision. It has to be recorded in a certain way. And most importantly, you really need to simplify content, make it engaging. And the reason for its success is also that people really liked listening to these services. There are lovely anecdotal stories about how a woman whose husband is a miner felt that Dr. Anita was her friend, you know, through her pregnancy months and after the baby was born, because her husband had very long hours at the mining. Asha workers saying that when I walk into a courtyard with mobile kunji, even the men look at me differently. It's like my gizmo, you know, in her language. Yeah. So we've been able to change. We've been able to change things in people's lives.
Yeah.
And that's what our work is all about. That we have been able to contribute to global understanding and expertise. This is one awards. We've won two GLOMOs, which are, you know, the GSM awards at Barcelona, which are like the Oscars of the mobile industry.
And Radharani, I had a question, and it's more like a personal question. So since I am into podcasting, I'm an avid listener, I'm a podcast producer, I always felt that audio as a medium is a very personal medium for anyone, you know, be it educational content, be it entertainment, whatever that is. Because when it's on video, even if you're looking at your own screen, you just feel like you're seeing something that is consumed by other people as well. But do you think that one of the reasons why this had such a huge impact and it was resonating with these women was because through IVR, when they were listening to Dr. Anita, they almost felt like she was talking to her one-on-one, you know, without giving her a face or something of that sorts?
Yeah, absolutely. See, when Dr. Anita starts on the Kilkari service and when she says, "Hello, bhaiya, bhabi, hum hai Dr. Anita, Bharat Sarkar ke Kilkari Seva se," you feel that she's talking to you. And like I said, you know, it's done in very simple language. It's full of examples. She uses rich sort of, you know, it has a richness of content. And we are very, you know, our cultures are very oral, right?
Yeah.
In India.
Yeah.
So how do stories get told? People in villages are not sitting down and reading books. Stories get told orally, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we took a lot of our inspiration from our rich oral tradition. We also, you know, Swati, one of the things that we did was we actually developed a lexicon, a dictionary of health terms, because sometimes we found that people don't even know the word ambulance. People don't know how to describe so many different things. So we have had to break them down and come up with a lexicon. So you see, what happens is that in health communication, everything becomes very technical. And you can't talk like doctors. These are simple women. These are, you know, mothers-in-law who think they know everything. These are men who are not really interested in, you know, childbirth and you know, all of that. So we had to appeal to all of them. So we did a lot of, and we built the character of Dr. Anita in a way that she would come across as a friend, philosopher, and guide. So there is authority yet empathy. So it's really like a lot of, you know, crafting of how do you put it across. But you're absolutely right. It was very one-to-one. It was not a one-to-many kind of thing. That's not the way we wrote. That's not the way we produced.
Yeah. Radharani, this has been an amazing conversation. I mean, I'm just overwhelmed with your stories, and it's just, I'm still processing everything that you said. And I know you have given me almost, an hour of your time. So I would like to now just end the conversation by asking you one last question, which is about your ongoing work during COVID-19. What are some of the initiatives and campaigns that you've rolled out? How are you viewing the new normal? And what is your vision for the next 3 to 5 years?
See, I'm very big into storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I apply storytelling, the principles of drama, character, situations to everything I do. I don't know whether you know Swati, but we have done two very successful, effective television dramas. One was called Aadha Full. It was about growing up in India. So it was on gender and adolescence, 78 episodes of three teen detectives called Kitty, Tara and Adrak in a small town called Badlipur. They solve a case every week over three episodes on Doordarshan. And through that whole story, we tackle gender issues, we tackle growing up issues. We also did something absolutely unique. It'll make you laugh when I say that I've also had the rare distinction of doing a drama on poo, on shit, on fecal sludge management. It's called Navrangi Ray, which was a unique partnership with Viacom 18. And we did a 26 episode television drama called Navrangi Ray on how to manage your shit, because a lot of India doesn't sit on sewer system, you know.
Yeah.
People have to build septic tanks and take care of septic tanks and all of that. So I'm now looking at doing a season 2 for Navrangi Ray. Fingers, eyes, toes, everything crossed. But this past year, actually, given its difficulties and challenges, work-wise has been a very rewarding year. We did a whole lot of work on COVID, for COVID. I'm actually currently engaged in giving strategic and creative leadership to Somalia and Afghanistan, where we have a project on COVID, and that's going very well. In Somalia, in fact, we've been told that the work that's going out has been deeply appreciated by the partner radio stations and television stations. And they have said, we never knew health communication could be done with a sense of humor, with these storytelling techniques. So that's really going well. I think I'm looking at, I'm very excited by technology. Like I said, I was a totally non-sciencey person. And now I'm like, you know, very, I just get a buzz in my head when I look at the endless possibilities offered by technology. So we are actually, I'm really very excited because we are doing an intervention in Bangalore for the city of Bangalore, which is supported by the H&M Foundation. We are part of a consortium. And BBC Media Action's mandate is to basically improve the understanding about waste pickers in the city of Bangalore amongst general population. And we are launching a campaign on social media this month, I mean, later in March. And I'm really looking forward to that. It's a very, very exciting campaign. It's a fascinating subject to work on. We are looking at using technology more and more. We are continuing to do a lot of work on sanitation. I have just finished working with our team in Myanmar. Unfortunately, the coup happened just as soon as we finished the work. So yeah, I mean, you know, for as long as I continue to work with BBC Media Action, the world is my oyster. I think the kind of exposure I've had to the world, you know, from working on Ebola to working on COVID in countries like Somalia, Afghanistan, you know, working on really interesting things for all sorts of different country programs. In India, we're doing really cutting-edge disruptive work. Our work is now getting published in journals, the results. So yeah, it's an exciting time. It's been really an exciting journey, very fulfilling, you know, in every way. It's not without its difficulties at all, but I think I'm really grateful for the opportunities I've got. And I think I could say with my hand on my heart that I've always tried to sort of, you know, put my 200% in the opportunities I've got. I've been respectful of these opportunities, which is why I try and put my best in. And yeah, so looking ahead.
If you'd like to donate to BBC Media Action or would like to know more about their work, you can visit www.bbc.co.uk/mediaaction. You'll find the link in the episode description. Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's vision.nari. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's thevisionnaripodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new visionary. Have a great day.